Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 49, our anniversary plus one episode. And I think it's safe to say we are in a little bit better mood than last week when we actually had our one-year anniversary show because Juventus actually beat a Milan team rather than insert whatever word you want to use to describe what Juventus did last weekend against AC Milan. So as we get going here, let me bring in the usual crew of Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Still breathing, Danny. Still breathing.
Still breathing. Hanging on by a thread, but still breathing. We've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Greetings. Yeah, it's a little more positive news today, although, I mean, of course, I'm still skeptical, but at least a little bit more positive.
And we've got a slightly tired Sergio Romero, who had one hell of a sports Saturday. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, Phyllis. Happy to be here. I felt better, but, you know, I'm still hanging on. Much like Juventus, I'm putting up my best foot forward.
Before we get going here, Sergio, why don't you give us the Cliff Notes version of what just happened on your sports Saturday, besides, obviously, the big Juventus win over Inter?
Yes. So, as I've mentioned before, my hometown team, Puebla FC, is mostly bad. Sometimes mediocre, but mostly bad. And this year they made the Liguilla, which is the playoffs for the league. And a friend of mine helped me get tickets for the second leg, quarterfinal second leg, and they won. They won. It was like 15,000 people who didn't know what to do with themselves because everyone was expecting them to lose, as they often do. And yeah, it was just great. I missed being able to go to a game. I missed being like with a lot of people sharing something. It somehow felt much more important when you're there. They won 1-0, which was the result they needed. And I didn't watch the goal because I was in the bathroom. And as I was, you know, doing my thing, a person next to me who was also doing his thing, we both made eye contact, which is, you know, poor etiquette, really, where, you know, when you're, you know, doing what you're doing in the bathroom. And we just suddenly heard the noise and we're like, did they score? And then we run outside. The guy slipped on piss. But he, you know, got to his feet. We both ran. We saw that it was a goal for our team. And then we hugged like we were lifelong friends, you know, like we were jumping and screaming and hugging, and it was just great. And then we said goodbye and I never saw that guy again. But I'm pretty sure, you know, like at the time, like I was going to be godfather for his son. Like it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing. We were really close in that particular moment. So yeah,
it was all those great people day. That say that sports don't matter. That's
exactly
your proof
why
against
matter.
You right there.
That's exactly why they matter, because you become friend with a dude who just slipped and piss and you don't care because they scored. So yeah, it was good. It was fun. It was a good day, good sports day overall. I'll keep you posted for semifinals. Maybe they're good.
Man, I thought I had good stories. Yeah. that was good.
Speaking of Club Puebla, Sergio, you wrote something about them. Give them a plug before we get going here.
Yes, the good folks at FMF State of Mind, which is our sister blog that focuses on the Mexican League, they gave me a shot to write for them about the team, about the season they had. And yeah, I think it's pretty good. It's kind of like a running diary of the whole season. And yeah, if you can, check it out. I think I plugged it in a previous graph back. If not, we can plug it on the post that goes up for this pod. But yeah, it's pretty good. If I do say so myself, I think it came out well. Shout out Danny, who helped me edit it. And yeah, I think it's pretty good. I mean, it's a pretty remarkable season. You know, I kind of know how Inter fans feel now, you know, rooting for a bad team for a long, long time. And then they're suddenly good. Like it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling to have.
Well, that's a good way to transition back into Juventus related things. And I think it's safe to say that optimism wasn't exactly high entering this second to last game of the Serie A season. And oh boy, did Juventus get not only a win, but a interesting win to say the least. So I'm going to turn it over to the man who recapped it for our site, Sam, and hopefully in fewer words than your recap, because obviously there's a lot going on, but your thoughts on the win that was, and the win that, at least for one more weekend, kept Juventus's Champions League hopes alive, barring any kind of UEFA craziness over the summer.
Yeah, that was, that piece was a beast. I don't usually write him that long. I try to keep him down. But, I mean, what didn't this game have? You know, the only thing that was missing was a streaker. Like, that's really what we're... Chucks, you said it in our Slack channel, and I think it was appropriate. What have I just witnessed to see so much crazy stuff happen? I mean, and this is what, you know, on one hand, you're like, this is what derbies are all about. You know, two teams that really don't like each other going at it. Everything was chippy. Everything was tense. The game was, you know, everything was really tight. And then you also have everything that you never want to see in any sporting event, which is the referee completely taking over as the story. Because I'll get this out of the way now, and this is for both teams. Gianpaolo Calvarez was awful. Absolutely dogpile nonsense.
He was bad.
He was really bad.
He was bad.
And it just goes to show, I don't know, Danny, if you remember whether or not you and I talked about this. And when we, right at the beginning of the restart, when we did that special edition pod with Bren and Tito, I think we at one point had a conversation of just how bad refereeing in Italy has become and how low the standard has dropped.
It hasn't gotten any better.
No, it hasn't. Like, I remember in August when I was writing the recap about the last game of the season against Roma, and they gave us Gianluca Rocchi, and it was his last game of the season. It was his last game of his career. And I was like, Italian officiating will be better without him. And I was like, well, wait, maybe. Cause I mean, the entire league has just been bad for the entire league this year. And some of the stuff that he called yesterday was absolutely non-existent. You know, was Rodrigo Bentancur playing particularly well yesterday? No. Was that in any way, shape, or form a second yellow card when he tackled Romelu Lukaku? Also, no. If Matthijs de Ligt, if that really is a penalty, the contact that de Ligt had on Lautaro's heel, then we might as well just give up defending. We might as well just give up moving on the pitch. We might as well just stand there and kick the ball to people while they're stationary. And, you know, even the move that won us the game, you know, Juan Cuadrado, he bought that penalty. He bought that. Let's be real about it. But beyond everything about the officiating, which was just, as we said, unfortunately is going to end up being the story of this game, it's really, like, as happy as I am for the win, there's a lot of, why are we seeing this now and not February and March? About this, you know, this and the Sassuolo game as well, where the team played very well, not great, but well enough. Certainly got helped by the fact that Sassuolo couldn't hit the target for anything. But, you know, the last two games have been relatively good. Inter only had a handful of shots before the red card yesterday. And they moved forward well. The finishing was enough. And I'm just sitting there wondering what is going on. Like, why did it take this long and for the situation to be this dire to all of a sudden see the kind of life that this team has needed for weeks and months at this point to start coming to the fore and actually seeing that what, you know, what all of the commentators have been calling the Juventus attitude for such a long time. It's tough to see. And, you know, especially since if everything doesn't go well next week, you're looking at, you know, one more game where you had played like this, where you hadn't dropped points against Benevento or Cagliari, that is the difference between us being ahead of Napoli right now and controlling our own destiny going into the final week of the season and hoping that Napoli have yet another brain fart and drop points against Verona next week. Cause you know, the team played with energy. They pressed really nicely. Even Ronaldo was pressing pretty well, which is not something you normally see out of his game. And Pirlo has also been making some really good tactical decisions over the last two games as well. Just the decision to play and soak up Sassuolo and counter them was a spot on move. The execution was a little bit iffy. And like I said, if Sassuolo had been better at finishing on Wednesday, we might've been talking about a very different situation. But then, you know, up until he had to park the bus after the red card, Pirlo had pushed the right buttons. He, you know, putting Kulusevski into the game, I think, was a major thing. A lot of people saw that and you know, group chats and stuff that I'm on started flipping out. But then you saw exactly why. Kulusevski started man-marking Marcelo Brozovic, and Inter was basically down a man in midfield because he did a really good job of it. And then when the red card did come, he made the right decisions again. You pull off Ronaldo, which, you know, everybody thinks of as a brave move. But, you know, Ronaldo's not the kind of guy that you want pressing at the front when you're down a man, especially not when he's a yellow card away from a suspension. You made the right move putting in Weston McKennie as well. Mara Demiral was a bit of a surprise to me. And I don't know about sending a guy on for his first game in 2 months in a situation like that. But, you know, everything finally kind of coming together, at least enough to get these results that we need, is, again, it's really frustrating, because if this had happened a little bit earlier, we wouldn't be talking about this at all.
Yeah, you basically took all the words out of my mouth as well. Those are almost exactly all the points I was going to say.
All right, good podcast, everybody.
So, tune in next time on the next thrilling episode of Dragon Ball Z. Good old throwback there.
Dude, do you want to get us sued? No.
That would be funny. Well, it wouldn't be funny. It would be expensive. But no, I guess, the only thing I'll add to that is, so we had a discussion last week on if it was Pirlo's fault or if it was kind of the squad, the management's fault for constructing a poor side. Obviously, it's both. But, you know, yesterday's game kind of edged me more towards, it's a bit paradoxical here, but it edged me more towards the point of it being Pirlo's fault, because we see what the team is capable of here. You know, it was a very professional performance against Inter. You know, obviously up to the 2-1, and then we were down 10 men, and then we had to fight for dear life to hold on to the lead, and then having the setback of the 2-2, but still getting that, you know, very entertaining penalty award in that Cuadrado put away, you know, excellently. So, you know, that was just great, as Brendan Rodgers would say, great character that we showed on that one. I don't quite have his accent down quite.
No, you need to work on your brodge a little bit there.
I don't really. Yeah, he's a. Well, congratulations, Leicester, though, for winning the FA Cup. So, you know.
Speaking of folks who had a good Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I love that there's a Leicester club at our bar in New York City, at my club's bar, and we love them. We're great friends. We're good friends with them. Big, really big happy to them.
Yeah. Good lads there. But, yeah, I mean, we showed, you know, just, yeah, great character against Inter and against Sassuolo. I mean, we were really under pressure on that in that game. Sassuolo were probably the better team overall, but we still, you know, got a smash and grab from that game. So, you know, seeing those two games, I'm like, clearly the team is capable. I mean, it's very imperfect team, very, you know, lots of flaws in the team, but it is clearly capable of doing good stuff. We also saw that against, you know, way back, it seems a million years ago now, but that 3-0 win against Barcelona, you know, that was also, I mean, again, Barcelona are kind of shambles, and just a few minutes ago lost 2-1 against Celta de Vigo, so they're out of the title race there. But, you know, the team clearly is capable of doing well. And the fact that it's been such a mess getting this top four spot, which, I mean, I've already given up, unfortunately. Although Milan against Cagliari is in about 15 minutes, so who knows? But I've effectively given up on that one. But the fact that, you know, the whole top four race has become such a mess, I mean, yeah, I hate to say it, but, you know, I kind of put this on Pirlo, you know. Obviously, the whole situation was a mess. But the team, yeah, it was more than capable enough of getting top four. And we just lost it against, you know, Benevento, Cotone. Who else did we drop points against? Hellas Verona, who hopefully will do something for us next week. Yeah, next week it is. And, you know, another point on that, which I thought was interesting, is we haven't done that badly against, like, top six teams, you know. Just doing it quickly off memory here, you know, we lost and won against Inter, lost and won against Milan, lost and won against Napoli. Atalanta, I mean, was, I think we lost and tied that one. And that loss was unlucky. I think we deserved a point on that one, but, you know, whatever. And let's see, I think we beat Lazio twice, didn't we? I think
Draw and a win, right?
Yeah, yeah. Should have done. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. I remember that one. In the last minute. And that should have been a win. That was in the last second. And then tied and beat Roma as well and beat Sassuolo twice. I mean, that's already top eight that we've done, I mean, really quite well against. And again, I mean, it's just we lost it against, you know, Fiorentina, Torino, Benevento, Hellas Verona. Like, that's just, yeah, those were the teams we lost this against. And, yeah, I mean, that's extremely, extremely frustrating. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, here we are going into the last match day, hoping for dear life for some kind of a miracle.
I agree. I mean, it was death by a thousand paper cuts. That's what it was, right? Like, Juventus didn't lose the title, or they, you know, if they failed to qualify for the Champions League, they didn't lose that by, you know, by getting trounced by the good teams, right? Like, they lost it because they dropped points against pretty much every relegation battler. So when that's happening, it's going to be tough to really compete. And, you know, now that, like Sam said, now you're just sitting here and hoping and praying that, you know, other teams drop points in order to make it to the Champions League, which, you know, it was tough to imagine that we'd be in this situation when the season started. But, you know, what I do agree is that it's remarkable how just a decent performance, because I don't think they played great against Sassuolo. I don't think they played great against Inter. I think they played better against Inter than against Sassuolo, but they weren't, you know, banner performances. They weren't, you know, beating the brakes of those teams. Like, they played competently. They played okay. They played good. And that was enough to get those wins. So it really does make you look back and like Chucks was saying, really a bit paradoxically, but really think, like, damn, like, if Pirlo just played the way they've been playing lately, which is a much more basic, much more understated way of playing, soaking up the pressure a little bit more, you know, hitting them on the counter, they're not doing anything that's drastically, you know, trying to change the game. They're just playing a normal formation, a normal way of playing football, and they're getting better results. So, you know, like we said last time, I don't think he's fully to blame. I think there's a lot of problems with the team. I think, you know, he's a rookie coach. He got given a tough job, but it really does make you wonder, like, what if they just decided to play a much more pragmatic way of playing earlier on in the season? And, you know, who knows where it would be right now. But yeah, it was at least, you know, just from an emotional standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, I think the Inter win was significant in the sense that they had not right, but I really thought they could have just rolled over and died, right? Like, I mean, they go down one man, they, you know, the Inter draws late in the game. Like, it just felt like one of those games that we've seen over and over again this season, in which they just, you know, play with a lack of urgency. And I think they didn't show that at all against Inter. I think they played really, 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 you know, with a lot of urgency. They showed that quote unquote Juve mentality and that passion, that grinta that we talk about. So it was a decent result. It was a decent game. It was, you know, they did what they had to do. It's just unfortunate that, you know, they no longer rely on themselves and that they have to wait for other results. And at this point, I've pretty much made my peace with Thursday night football. I think, you know, we're getting that. Like I mentioned in this Slack chat with you guys, outside of, you know, Matthijs de Ligt, I'm fine with just letting this current iteration of Juventus kind of go into the night. I'm kind of okay with tearing this site down at this point.
Chiesa either?
Yeah, I think Kies and De Ligt, everyone else, even like Dybala, everyone knows I'm a big Dybala fan, but you know, even him, it's like at this point, you know, I would hope he stays, but if he doesn't, I'm, you know, it is what it is. Like it does feel like the end of an era. It very much feels like the end of a cycle. And if that, you know, end kind of gets of, you know, if failing to qualify for the Champions League, if going to Europa League is kind of like the trigger that makes that, you know, end of an era, like, you know, something that they have to do financially speaking, I think I'm okay with it. I think they had to do it at some point, and this is, you know, as clear a signal that they have to do it.
Yeah, we what is the old saying that the Scudetto is won not necessarily against the bigger sides, but against the provincial sides? Well, Juventus's top four position has definitely been lost out on because of how they did against the provincial sides. I mean, you know, we've mentioned it all year long, just how inconsistent they've been against small clubs, and especially the teams at the bottom of the tables. Really, now that we're all of one game left in the 2020-21 season, it gets magnified that much more, because you just look at kind of all the points that Juve's dropped along the way. And, you know, that one, you know, those 2 points that they dropped against this team and the 2 points they dropped against that team. And I mean, I think I jokingly said it with Chucks last week. I mean, it adds up. And, you know, now we're in a situation where we're hoping Juventus gets help. And if they had just, say, turned one or two of those wins or draws or losses into wins, then this is very much a preventable situation.
Put it this way. Caicedo doesn't score in the Lazio game, and we're leading Napoli right now. And that's the other thing, is that, you know, you've talked about this a whole lot in your pieces, Danny, after games, is just like the self-inflicted errors that have been the cause of all of so much of this too. Like that brain fart against Lazio, you throw away 2 points that would be the difference in being in the top four right now. You know, brain fart, you don't close down Malinovsky against Atalanta, you're at least level with Napoli right now. Like, so much of this game comes down to fine details, and it's a rude reminder of that this season, because for such a long time we've been so far ahead that sometimes the fine details haven't necessarily added up, at least not in domestic competition. But it really is a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there, and you do control your own destiny on the last day of the season. And now, you know, like you said, hoping that Verona ponies up and that Napoli, you know, reverts back to their norm of mentally bottling it when the pressure is on. And, you know, what's going to happen? And, you know, then you have to ask yourself, what's going to happen? Even if you do make the Champions League, what the heck are you going to do with this team now?
Yeah, part of me also realizes that, my God, it would be embarrassing to be the form we would show in the Champions League. Unless some kind of, like, we move heaven and earth this summer in the transfer window, then, my God, it would be thoroughly embarrassing if we did reach the Champions League and, I don't know, came up in the... Because that's the thing, we wouldn't be in pot one, we would be in pot two because of, you know, not winning the league. So, you know, Lord knows what kind of group of death we would get. But obviously financial
you're
reasons,
not, you know. I mean, you're guaranteed to get at least one of the big pot two teams, even if you're in the pot, if you're in pot one. Look at what we did, look at what we drew out of pot two this year. We ended up with Barcelona, and, like, you know, that's I think the beauty of this, of that rule change. I've always liked it, and I still think that if we do make the Champions League, you know, barring bad luck from pot three or pot four, and the knockout round would still, I would still be reasonably expectant of making the knockout round. Not much after that, though.
Yeah, unfortunately, agree indeed. And again, you know, obviously for financial reasons, it's pretty imperative to...
That's the big one.
And that's, you know, it's a shame that... it's a shame that, like, regular kind of fans like us, that we have become so aware of just, like, the financial aspect of football. You know, once upon a time, it was all just like, oh, all we care about is winning, you know, titles and stuff, and, like, you know, being in just upper echelons of European football. Now it's all about, Yeah, we got to win, but hey, we got to make, let's see, the second leg of this round so that we'll make enough money to roughly break even. You know, and it's like we've all become armchair CPAs, frankly, and that's, well, I got to brush up on my accounting to do that. I mean, I really do enough of that. Do enough of that. I don't want to do that.
You're the one with the economics background, Chucks, not us.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all an act. It's all an act. It's all lie. People are easily impressed. That's all an act. But yeah, you know, and just going back to like Sam, what you said about just the fine margins. I mean, again, we're just reminded of the fact that football, you know, it's a game of such fine margins. You know, I mean, just within a game, for instance, I mean, you can donate for 89 minutes and 59 seconds, and then the 1 second you turn off, you know, that could be it. And it's the beauty and heartache of the game, really. And well, I've learned more of the heartache side of it the last few years, really.
Well, as much as Juventus's win this weekend was refreshing, I guess, or maybe knowing how the other results went and how they needed to go, maybe not so great. But Juventus also have a cup final coming up in a few days, and Sergio mentioned it in the grab bag, just kind of how this is one last chance, not only for Andrea Pirlo this season, but for Juventus to actually salvage something out of this season. And obviously the Champions League status will be determined in the final weekend of the season when everybody's playing at the same time. So if you've got the multi-screen experience going next weekend, good on you for trying to pay attention to all of those games. But I will start with Sergio. Your thoughts on the upcoming Coppa Italia final, and just how optimistic are you knowing that Juventus are playing an Atalanta team that are looking very Atalanta-y these last few months?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's a very tricky rival in the final. They haven't really been able to get the best out of the team when playing Atalanta. So it's going to be very interesting. The game in general is going to be, I think, pretty good. I think it's going to be a good experience watching. And it's going to be like you said, the last chance for Pirlo to kind of get something out of the season, right? And it is telling that we as Juventus fans have been so spoiled by success that, you know, we're looking at a season in which they won the Supercoppa, which sure is, you know, a glorified friendly, if you want to put it that way. But still, it's a cup. And they could still come out of the season with the Coppa Italia win. And if they manage to make the Champions League, which, again, I don't think it's going to happen, but if they manage to do it, that's not a horrible season, to be fair. I mean, you know, getting the Coppa Italia, getting the Supercoppa, making Europe, that's a decent season. That's not a horrible season, you know. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're very much headed towards Europa League, very much headed to Thursday night football. But I don't know why. I guess it's the, you know, psychologically speaking, it's just going to feel like a lot, like the season went a lot better if they manage to get that Coppa Italia win, that if they don't, which I know doesn't make a lot of sense because it's not like it changes everything else from the season. But when you look back on it, it's like, oh, well, they won the Coppa. That's not so bad. That's something. That's a thing. And we haven't won the Coppa in 3 years, I think. So I hope they win it. I hope they get it. And even if Andrea Pirlo, you know, gets sacked at the end of the season, which I think we all agree is what's most likely going to happen, it's going to be nice for him, I think, to win the Coppa Italia, to, you know, go out a winner in a certain way. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. I've often said Coppa Italia is much more important than the league title. So, you know, I completely unrelated to how Juve did this year, but I've often said that. I've been of that opinion.
I'm just hoping that if we do win, Juan steals the magic spray and puts it all over Pirlo the way he always did with Max. But it's going to be an interesting game. I would not be surprised if we saw the exact same approach that Pirlo took in Bergamo a couple of weeks ago, where he definitely played for the counter and did relatively well with that game, with that tactic, until the lapse against Malinovsky at the very end that allowed him to take that shot. I very much think that this is going to be a situation where, you know, we could see Kulusevski and Chiesa just barreling up on the counterattack, and whoever's in the strike pair, you know, keep trying to keep pace with them. I think it's their best bet, honestly, because this is obviously not a group that can play toe-to-toe with Atalanta right now. This is Atalanta are the better side and are coached by the better man right now. But it's certainly winnable. You know, obviously, you know, there are guys in this team that can do, you know, that can turn it around whenever they feel like it. It's just a matter of getting everybody else around those guys to play like some semblance of a decent team. And I think we'll be seeing, you know, De Ligt, and I think it's going to be De Ligt and Bonucci in the middle, because I don't think Chiellini's going to be playing back-to-back games. And I think we'll be seeing a lot of De Ligt wrestling with Duvan Zapata, and a lot of Juve just trying to absorb and break. And also, it will most likely be the last time we see Gigi Buffon in Juventus colors for realsies this time. And so that'll be emotional. And I hope that we'll get to see him hold that up. See Gigi lift one last trophy in a Juventus kit. I could be okay with, I could be salved by that over the summer if we get to see that.
Yeah, that would be an emotional departure again, really, of Buffon. Really, when isn't it an emotional departure if someone like him leaves? I mean, it's can't see a world in which that wouldn't be emotional. Yeah, I mean, I guess based on form between Atalanta and Juventus, based on form, I think we're pretty screwed. But based on, I mean, it's a cup final. Cup finals are just erratic. I mean, finals of any sort, they're just, form goes out the window. It's a one-off, one-shot game. And, you know, you could have 90 minutes where suddenly everyone is just inspired by divine powers to play, you know, the best performance of the season. So I'm always aware that cup finals are just, you know, a different beast. And yeah, form is not as relevant. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think, you know, like you said, Sam, the tactical setup of that Pirlo showed yesterday against Inter was smart. It was definitely a gamble to put Kulusevski on, just in terms of, you know, public image. But yeah, I mean, it worked well. And I imagine he'll do the same thing on, was it Wednesday, I think the game is, to hopefully good effect. And yeah, again, it is strange, like Sergio said, in such a dire season as it was, we will still possibly win two titles and possibly make Champions League, which, you know, for any other team, that would be, a smashing success. But we are not any other team. We are the great, mighty Super League playing Juventus. Possibly. I don't know. I don't know how that fiasco is still going. But yeah, I mean, just cautiously optimistic. I think it's at least, you know, no glaring injuries that I know of. The only thing I do worry about is that Chiesa has not quite been the same since returning from injury, which, you know, he's played a lot of games this season. I mean, it's just been a taxing season for everyone. And then, of course, just being new at the club. I mean, still very young, of course, but just being new at the club and playing so many games in a season. And in a season that just has had so much changing on the pitch and off the pitch at the club. So, you know, I obviously sympathize with him, and I understand, but he's kind of our most important player right now. So kind of a problem to have him, still not 100%, but who knows? This could be the game where he just, you know, turns it back on as a second to last hurrah of the season.
Shall we answer a few Twitter questions before we go, gentlemen?
Hit me.
Hit me with that funky beat.
All right. Let's see. Which one do I want to start with? Do I want to tee one up for Sergio, or do I want to make us laugh here? From @HandyVandy, do we panic or do we have faith that our Lord and Saviors, the Wings of Fetty, predictably pull us to glory vicariously through Fiorentina? No. Or is FIFA the culprit behind the ESL? Realistically, on a scale of 1 to 9 Scudetti in a row, how much suck does Murda suck, and will they break us up this summer?
And that's a whole lot of questions in one.
I'm gonna go with the final two.
I forgot to add. That question was all caps, by the way. So
Twitter still allows that.
I would hope.
I think it puts you on a watch list, though.
Half the blog accounts tweets are in all caps these days. So.
First off, on a scale of 1 to 9, Scudetti 9 because they suck, just in general. Will the team get broken up this season? That's a really interesting one and will depend on a lot of money things that we may or may not end up privy to. I certainly think a certain amount of tearing down has to happen. The midfield's got to get gutted. I would prefer a certain forward to not be on the team anymore. And there needs to be reconstruction here. You know, we've been trying to tweak around the edges for too long. It's time, like Sergio said, take your unsellables, your Chiesas, your De Ligts. I was going to say I would put Juan into there. Juan and Danilo, I think are two guys that you hold on to.
Agreed.
The resurrection of Danilo.
Beyond that, it's, you know, if there's a complete teardown and reconstruction and we take a year or two to find our feet again before, you know, with a younger, better, more hungry group of players, I'd be down for it. I hope it. And I think it has to happen. I also think it has to happen, as I said last week, it has to happen in the boardroom too. I think that the current board has kind of lost this plot, and I'd like to see some changes there. But yeah, I think that's got to happen.
Yeah, I think Sergio, you said it some episodes ago that, you know, if we would tear, or if we would revolutionize the squad, I guess, and have, you know, lots of outgoing players and lots of incoming players, you know, it would just be tricky given the current market. We would have to probably do a lot of swap deals or just loans with options and just get really creative accounting in that sense. So that does make it more difficult to kind of have a wholesale out with the old, in with the new this summer, which, I mean, I still would like that, of course, but just think about it practically would be difficult. But clearly there are a lot of players that, you know, need to go and a lot of needs that the squad has right now. You know, Hunter had that great piece, I think about a month ago or so, just on, like, you know, who should absolutely stay in and who might, you know, be negotiable and who absolutely should go. And that's another thing. It's like right now, let's say we keep the squad completely as is right now, we still have like two or three player. I mean, well, more than that, we still have a need right now for players additional players as it is. So basically, if there were a revolution, then we would need to both replace the outgoing players that we sell and then still add, you know, players that we would need right now. So practically and financially, that would be very, very, very difficult. But I hope it happens, because, you know, I don't want another season like this. My God, I really don't.
Prepare yourself, Chucks.
Yeah.
This year.
Yeah, I mostly agree with you guys, and especially, and that's why I've been such a proponent of, you know, Europa League, you know, mostly, but, you know, because I think it's funny that they go to Europa League, but also, you know, I think Sam mentioned it, or Chucks mentioned it, that, you know, really, I mean, if they make Champions League, what are we, like, you know, we don't really have any expectations to win it or any hopes to win it, but with Europa League, they might have a shot, which I think is a lot, you know, it's just much more fun to play in a tournament that you can actually win. But, you know, outside of that, I think it just triggers. I think it just makes it something that they have to do, because if they make it to Champions League, I can totally see, you know, just maintaining this current, you know, current core and just kind of like Sam said, just tweaking around the edges. Maybe they sell Dybala to bring in someone else, you know, someone who they think will help the team, but, you know, a Rabiot type, you know, like a good player, but someone they don't really, you know, need or have a good fit for. And it's just going to be pretty much this team again. It's just going to be another year of this team, this exact same iteration. And I just think they need the teardown. They just need it. And if financially the, you know, not making the Champions League, that's what triggers it, then I'm all for it. Like Sam said, I'm all for it, you know, just because they do need to completely, you know, rebuild this thing from the ground, especially because they have so many guys that are just, you know, in the end, you know, at the end of their, you know, their time with Juventus because of age, because of performance, because of whatever. And it just feels to me like if they make the Champions League next year, they're going to try to run it back. They're going to be like, hey, we're not that far. And we are very far. So I just think that's the best thing going forward, just to tear it all down and kind of, you know, start anew. And if, you know, not making Champions League is what triggers it, then, you know, it is what it is, but I'm all for it.
You have a twisted sense of humor, man. You said you thought this was funny, man. Damn, you got a twisted sense of humor.
It's funny. It's funny. It's going to be awesome to see like Juventus against like
it's funny faux pas, team. Not funny haha. That's
it's going to be like great to have the group stage, and it's going to be like Juventus against the team from Belgium and Turkey and things like that. Like it's just going to be different. It's going to be different, and you know, I'm trying to look at it on the positive side.
The thing is, as valid as I think the point is, that you just made is about, you know, if we do make Champions League next weekend, that the hierarchy, if it's not changed around by forces even higher up in Exor after the Super League debacle, might just try to stay the course and do one more run with Ronaldo instead of rebuilding. But if you do end up landing in the Europa League, financially, you'll end up tearing down and not being able to build back up. And that is why I've always kind of been very, very bullish on how necessary being in the Champions League is going to be next year, because you lose out on Champions League money in the state that this team is in, the rebuild's still necessary, but it's going to take a lot longer to get than it would be if we're playing in the Europa League next year with financial implications that are minuscule by comparison.
All right, Sergio mentioned Adrian Rabiot from @Expendion. Has Rabiot been underrated this season?
Yes. Yes. I think he's the best midfielder they currently have. I think that's the thing. Like I think all of our points, really the whole season, that these are not bad players necessarily. They just don't fit in together. They just don't work with the current setup they're doing. Rabiot, I think he showed it both against Inter and against Sassuolo. He's a really good midfielder. He's a really good box-to-box midfielder, a guy who can, you know, get possession back, who can dribble the ball, who can, you know, lead counterattacks. He's really good at that. He's really, really good at that. If you just let him loose and let him do that, like, he's a really, really productive player. He's a really, really good player. The things that they wanted to shoehorn him in a way that really doesn't make any sense. And we saw it. I think the game, the Sassuolo game, to me, was the perfect encapsulation of who Rabiot is, in the sense that he made a lot of mistakes early on. He lost possession often close to his own box. And that's natural because that's not what he's good at. But he also had that, you know, fantastic goal to open the scoring for Juve. And he also had the assist. Like, he can do those things. Like, he is a very good player when used correctly. And I don't know if underrated is exactly the word, but I would say, you know, mismanaged, misused, because I think he's a really, really good player. I would love to see him stay, actually. I think he could definitely be, you know, not quite a building block, but someone you can definitely, you know, pimp, like, earmark every single game as a starter if you just let him do his thing. And I think he's going to be really good. Unfortunately, I think we're never going to get to see that, because I'm pretty sure he's going to be sacrificed to the, you know, capital gains altar. And just because he came in on a free, he's on very high wages, like, it just makes sense to sell him from a financial perspective. But it really, and especially because the other guy that would be in that position is Rodrigo Bentancur, and he's obviously at all-time low, and they have that weird deal with Boca Juniors. So when they sell him, they have to pay like a big chunk to Boca Juniors. It just doesn't make a lot of financial sense to get rid of Bentancur, so they will probably get rid of Rabiot, and it's going to be a shame because I think he's a really good player that just, you know, was very, very mismanaged in his time at Juventus. And I'm already pissed off when he, you know, when we saw him, when we see him next year in some Premier League side, and he's just, you know, balling, because he's really, really good if you can use him the way you're supposed to use him.
I would agree with mismanaged. I will say that he does have that really annoying tendency to switch off for a week or two and just like throw in some games where he's just clearly not mentally there. I don't disagree with you, Sergio, that he would be that he could be a very important contributor to the team if he were to stay going forward, but he will have to erase that from his game because it gets a little old when you see that, especially because you know what he can do. And then you see, you know, a couple of games, like I think there was, you know, late February, early March, there were a couple of games where he was just like not even, like he just wasn't present. And that needs to change. But beyond that, would I want to keep him around? Yeah, I would.
If I can just quickly add to that before you move on. I think Rabiot, to me, is one of those players who, by himself, he's rarely, if ever, going to be like a game changer or a spectacular, you know, player. Because he's totally not supposed to be that, and that's fine. Rabiot, to me, is just one of those players that, like, when the collective, the collective unit is working well, he's going to be really, really good. He's going to just, like, solidify the side really well. But when it's not, then it's hit or miss, really. In the same way that I thought Matuidi was like that as well. Like, I thought, you know, by himself, he's not going to, you know, be a game beater or a world beater. But I think when the collective was working really well, Matuidi was so useful, I thought, tactically. And I think it's similar, not identical, but similar with Rabiot. I appreciate him as a player as well. But yeah, like Sergio said, I guess it's likely that he's going to be sacrificed as a goat to the altar of capital gains.
All right, a couple more here from @Juventino_BNA. Is Zidane really the kind of man that would take a pay cut to coach a team that might be banned from Serie A and Champions League next season?
I don't know. Like, obviously, it makes a lot of sense that Zidane is being linked to Juventus just because he has been very successful, just because he has said that you know, he's not going to keep going at Real Madrid. But I think he had a quote that said that he's just like tired, that he's mentally tired or something like that. It seems unlikely that he would I don't think Juventus will get banned from Serie A, but it's very likely that they won't make Champions League. So I just don't see him currently in his, like, the current moment he is at his career to really want to take on that challenge, right? Like, to take on a side that is most likely going to be rebuilding. It just doesn't seem like something that he would be, you know, much up for. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm not close friends with Zinedine Zidane, so who knows? Maybe he does want to do it. Maybe he has that, you know, he does have that Juve background. Maybe he does want to do it. Maybe he wants a different challenge. But I think I saw someone that he's also interested in the French national team after the Euros, which to me would make a lot, like, considering what he has said and you know, the quotes he has given, it just seems to me like something that's much more of his speed right now, like in terms of what he's looking for, which is, you know, maybe a less demanding job in the sense of, you know, day in and day out. I think that being a national team coach is a bit less demanding in that sense specifically. So, you know, who knows? I would love to see him as a Juve coach, but I don't, you know, and it makes sense he's being linked to us all the time, but I just don't, I've never seen him as someone who's really kind of like a realistic coach for us.
I'll beat Sam to it. Does that mean that the current guy coaching the French national team will then be coaching Juventus?
That'd be interesting.
actually, I don't think so, because when did this happen? This was in December of 2019, after Sarri signed with Juve, and I didn't realize this until it was pointed out to me recently. Deschamps actually has a contract that runs until the World Cup.
Never mind.
So if he were to leave France, it would be his and be replaced by Zidane in that, in a case like that, it would be his decision.
Man, that'll be some musical chairs right there.
It would be. I personally still think that Deschamps will end up at Juventus again at some point in his career, because, you know, he's gone on the record as saying that he deeply regrets having left after the Serie B season. It wouldn't be surprising to me, actually, frankly, if both Zidane and Deschamps end up being Juventus coaches at some point. But it would be difficult for me to see it happening now, although I would really like to see it at some point. And I think actually if Deschamps were to come to the, were to be the coach of the team next year, it would actually probably be a really good fit for how to rebuild. He had to build France back up when he took over, because that had just been, he took over right after the 2012 Euros, which had been a bit of a problem for France, and he built that back up into a World Cup winning side within a cycle and a half. So I think that would be a good fit, but I don't think it'll be happening. And it's really, you know, it's a question of, you know, if you do move on from Pirlo, what does actually happen?
Yeah, I imagine Zidane will take a break, because I mean, certain jobs are just stressful, you know, and the Real Madrid job strikes me as a job that's just really, really, really stressful, especially just the last, you know, few years, a lot been going on at the club. So I imagine he'll take a break, especially because, you know, let's not forget, like he had left Real after winning those three Champions Leagues, and, you know, he was meant to just like leave. And then the whole thing with Lopetegui happened, and then he kind of came back. It was sort of, I guess, persuaded to come back, almost as a favor, I guess. So, you know, he was going to kind of quit anyway. So I imagine he'll take this time to just really take a break. But who knows? Like a wise man once said, I'm not good friends with Zidane. So, yeah.
Speaking of that wise man, we will put one on a tee like he's Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox, from David Desberg at The True ROAC. Sergio Romero, can a Serie A champion really consider themselves not fraudulent if they can't be decided struggling to make the Champions League?
You know, that's a good question, because I was on the fence. Actually, initially, I thought, you know, I think that they might not be frauds because they actually are champs, but they couldn't beat a 10-man Juventus, the worst 10, like the worst Juventus side in a decade, with 10 men, and put the nail in the coffin of their Champions League hopes, which is a very fraud-like thing to do for Inter. So they choked away the game. Look, it's fine. Every dog has its day. They won. That's cool. Congrats on the Serie A. You know, we are all about Copa wins, so whatever, it doesn't matter. But, you know, you do have to ask the question. I mean, head-to-head, the whole season, two wins for Juve, one loss, one draw. That feels to me, you know, if you really want to get into the specifics, we are the better team. That's just the numbers. That's just facts. Congrats on beating like Benevento and all those teams. Though we couldn't do that, so good on them for doing that.
Congrats on beating Benevento.
Couldn't have said it any better.
We shall wrap things up there. As always, thank you for the Twitter questions. You can send us some at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can follow us there as well. You can also follow us on Facebook at Black and White and Red All Over. If you want to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Apple iTunes, search Black and White and Red All Over. Feel free to rate us and leave us a review there. Hey, maybe next week we'll give you a shout out if you do so. The same thing goes for Google Podcasts and Spotify. Search Black and White and Red All Over. We'll be coming to you guys next week, hopefully in a good mood. It'll be one or the other, seeing as what the current standings look like. So you can probably guess whatever happens in terms of where Juventus finish, where we'll be standing on the fence on that. So for Sam Lopresti, for Sergio Romero, and for Chucks, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you guys next week.